See, today I'm going to tell you my chariots of fire story. I'm going to tell you basically throughout this sermon one long tale of the only time in my life I've ever run competitively. So obviously this guy on the screen, this is the film version. Does anyone know who this film was based after? Eric Liddell. So Eric Liddell is famous for having said, "God made me fast. When I run, I feel his pleasure." Let me quote to you from a lesser known runner. His name is Richard Patton. He said, "God made me slow. When I run, I feel pain in my legs." I have only entered one running race in my life. Last year, I took on the Mount Stuart 10K. Now, being the sort of guy whose philosophy for life is, sure, 'twill be grand. The last time I had run a 10K, it was about a year before that. And sure enough, the race started, and it was grand. It was lovely. Everyone had been chatting and happy beforehand, all of us huddled together, and then bang, off we went. And you know what? It was gorgeous. And I started running round, and I thought, this is beautiful. Mount Stuart is such a lovely place. And I'm thinking to myself, we should come back here more often. I haven't been back since. It was a harrowing tale I'm about to tell you. And we ran round the lake, and I thought, this is it. This is the beautiful run I'd always dreamt of. Maybe this is going to be okay. 10 laps of the lake, this is going to be easy as can be. But that wasn't the track. Instead of turning left to go round the lake one more time, we had people standing, pointing, going this way, telling me to go right, telling me to go uphill, towards the woods, off the beaten track, through the trees. Nobody had mentioned William McKeown or Steve Gurley. You are here today, so you will pay for this, that this was a cross-country race. Nobody had mentioned that. Now, they probably don't think it was cross-country at all, but I tell you, for a guy who does not run, this was cross-country. And I embarked on what was one of the most difficult runs of my entire life. Now, in many ways, the running the race is a perfect metaphor for the Christian life and is exactly the one used in our very short passage for us this morning. Our author had just rattled off a list of heroes of faith in chapter 11. He's written of examples to look towards and who have triumphed in the faith, but also to those who faced adversity and violence and those who have stared the enemy in the eye and remained faithful to the end. And all of them, strong faith, little faith, all of them got to the end. The ones whose names we have printed before us, the ones the writer doesn't have the time to tell us about, and the ones we will get to meet in heaven. Our passage this morning is the turning point in the road. No longer is our writer addressing the heroes of old, but now instead is turning his attention to his listeners and by extension this morning to us. And he turns this corner in the road with this word, therefore. This therefore is like a hinge that leads us with all the weight of all the past weeks of sermons and all the information that he has given us. It is this knowledge of the faithful ancestors of the faith behind us. He says, therefore, let us keep on persevering. Let us keep our eyes on Jesus, our example par excellence. Now, he uses that beautiful phrase to describe these previous witnesses. He calls them that cloud of witnesses, those who have seen and testified by word and life of the power of God in their lives and of the infinite worth that it is of knowing him. And we draw confidence from those who have trod this path of faith before us, don't we? As we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, here we envision those who have completed their race and taken the seats in the stand to cheer on those who are still running the race. Fascinatingly, though, the writer doesn't say, keep your eyes on them. Keep your eyes on their example. Learn from their lives. Learn from their mistakes. He doesn't say, can you hear the roar of the arena? He doesn't say anything like that. Instead, later on, he's going to point to where our eyes need to be, that they need to be fixed on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. Now, I hinted that this was the first race that I had entered, but that was maybe the first race I had ever entered willingly. In P2, I entered the egg and spoon race because the teacher said, Richard, you have to do something. And so I entered the egg and spoon race because I thought, well, it's less embarrassing if the egg falls off and nobody can complain that I actually didn't run. But it's also the greatest sporting achievement of my life. You see, I came second in the egg and spoon race at P2. I peaked at an early age and have since then lived in the shadow of my former self. But the reason why I came second was I was so excited that my dad was coming to watch. And I remember this race vividly because I ran and I couldn't believe my fortune. Everyone else had dropped their eggs at the start. And I went on thinking, look at the dexterity of my hand. And I was very well read for a six-year-old. And ran on. And suddenly, I turned around and there was Dad. And I went, Dad, hi. And waved the egg out of my hand. And turned to pick it back up again. And Dad's going, run, Richard, run. And I'm going, hi. As Michael Taylor, that's right, I haven't forgot who it was, snaked his way past me. I haven't forgiven him, and took the gold, and I took second place. And I still remember Dad saying to me, you know, Richard, that was yours to lose. You were the one right up at the head, but you forgot the finish line. You spent too much time looking at the people around you, watching you. Later, our writer is going to tell us to keep our eyes not on these people who have run the race so successfully before us, or so imperfectly, I should say, before us. But he's going to tell us to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. And he's going to tell us to keep them fixed there for forever. Now, these heroes of faith, as we call them, they are inspirational, but they're not there for anything more than our instruction and our encouragement. We learn and we grow from their experiences and from their lives. We see the power of God at work in their weakness. But as much as these fellow believers might inspire us, as Raymond Brown, a commentator, points out, they cannot strengthen us. That role belongs to another, and it belongs entirely unto Jesus. And so we've got to see the first of the let us in this, and it is let us also lay aside every weight and sin. So we have to talk about what we need to reject if we're going to run this race. Because we have our very first exhortation to set aside every weight and every sin that clings to us. Some translations will talk about the sin that so easily entangles. And you see, you don't run a race carrying weights, and you don't run a race in winter clothes. I mean, you know, winter clothes are heavy, they're bulky. They only serve to slow you down. If you run a race in winter boots, you're going to wreck your ankles, your knees, and everything's going to fall apart, and you're not going to race well, let alone finish the race well. You'll be hindered. You'll be kept back. You'll be slowed down by the burden that you're carrying. And the picture that the writer is looking to here is the picture of the ancient runner in the arena, and ancient athletes used to run completely stark naked from head to toe so that there would be nothing to hold them back. There would be no wind resistance whatsoever as they ran the race. And our modern runners take something of that similarly as well. They put on something that is skin tight. They wear things that are light, that are not going to cause them resistance when they run, and it allows them to run without the feeling of any weight on them. This is the image that our writer's talking to when he says, set aside the things of sin. Set aside that which clings so tightly to you. And the picture is to illustrate this for us, what it is in our sins, that as we run the race, we must tear away from ourselves all that will entangle us and ensnare us and keep us from running this race well and even finishing this race. Because this word cling, it's a terrible word when you think about it. It's like trying to peel something off you that is ultimately trying to hold on to you as well. It's like if you've ever been thrown into a river while you're wearing your clothes, or you've ever thought, or you've just simply got soaked out in the rain and you're coming and you go, my clothes, they're clinging to me. And you almost have to peel them off when you get into the house. This is the picture that's being given. It's the thing that is clinging onto you and will not let you go. This is what he's talking about. And so what we need to do is we need to take stock of our lives. We need to pause for a moment as we're running and realize that we're carrying things that we shouldn't. That in our hands are weights which will slow us down and keep us from running the race of faith well. That we have to let them drop and let them clang and let them sink into the earth beneath us and be done with them forever as we run on. We need to battle against the sins that will not leave us, those addictions that we have late at night and those idols that we cherish in the daylight, the ones that we love and the ones that we hate, which have such a grip on us that we cannot stop doing them even if we tried our best. We need to be getting rid of them, those sins that cling onto us and onto our very soul, onto our very skin, like a leech that saps the energy from us, that means that we will not finish this race well. We will end up finishing this race like we are anemic and there is nothing left in us. We need to watch out because we are tempted by so much in this world. We are tempted by consuming everything that comes before us. We are tempted to look for security over being, we are the most risk-averse generation that has ever been. Health and safety has destroyed us. And we need to be careful about the temptation to go in looking for status and for power, because these are the things that we are all tempted with, to provide for ourselves, to protect ourselves, and to exalt ourselves over everybody else. And what we need to do is we need to rip these sins from us. And you have to ask then, how do we gain the strength to battle, to fight, to do this, to drop the weights that we carry? We take our eyes and we fix them on Jesus. We rehearse together the old story. We preach the gospel to ourselves every day and to one another. We remind ourselves of the old, old story. We remember that we have a Savior tempted in every way in which we are and yet without sin. That we have one who has conquered the enemy, one who knows the way through and out of the temptation and always has the out waiting. We run aiming for the goal and for the finish line. We run for the reward which is held out to us, and we hate everything that is going to hold us back from the finish line. We hate everything that is going to weigh us down and make us stumble, and the things that are going to cling and stick to us. We hate that which holds us back and do as the writer says. We lay these things aside as Moses did, who considered the reproach of Christ greater wealth than all the treasures of Egypt. Russell Moore, a writer, an American guy, he says this. He says, the sheer animal force of temptation ought to remind us of something. The universe is demon hunted. It also ought to remind us there's only one among us who has ever wrestled with the demons and has prevailed. We keep our eyes on Jesus, the one who went to war against the devil in the desert and who won and survived the three temptations that were put before him. We keep our eyes on Jesus, looking to him, not the sins that are in front of us, not the crowds that are around us, not anything else that is within us, but we look to Jesus. Halfway round the race in Mount Stuart, somebody handed out a little bottle of water. And I thought to myself, this is great. I feel like a real marathon athlete. And I took the bottle of water and I took a drink and I ran on and I watched everybody else, take the drink and soak themselves and just throw it into the trees. And I thought to myself, that's littering. And I thought, I'm better than that. I'm going to carry mine until I see a bin. Even better, a recycling bin. And I ran on, and as I ran on, I began to find that this thing began to really annoy me. As I realized I was carrying something that I didn't need to carry. And then I started swapping it into the other hand, and as I kept going, I realized, no, this is just as irritating, and I kept swapping hands and kept swapping hands, and I noticed that people were lapping me, and I started to think to myself, well, actually, I'm spending more time thinking about what to do with this bottle than I'm thinking about what to do with my feet, and I need to get finished because I'm dying here, and I need to get to the end, and I'm thinking, okay, and then when I thought nobody else was looking, I just chucked it. And what's fascinating is the more I've thought about it is those people who took the drink and just chucked it immediately, all those bottles got picked up, but my bottle is probably still sitting somewhere around Mount Stuart race. But the point is to open our eyes to the realities of what sinful things we have tolerated, just like I tolerated this bottle in my hand for what must have been one whole kilometer. Just what are we tolerating in our lives that is actually holding us back? That is consuming our minds to be thinking about what am I going to do with this, when the best and the easiest thing for us to do is just simply to chuck it and get rid of it and run the race without this distraction sitting in our hands of this sin that we want to hold on to because we think we're better than everybody else and we can get to the end just fine holding on to this. When in reality, I was no better than anybody else in that race and I ended up chucking it anyway. But this is the encouragement. What we need to realize is that these things, they're not a comfort. These things that we hold on to, they don't make us better. They are the leeches that are sucking our soul dry, and they need to be ripped from our bodies. So now we've got to talk about how we're going to run this race. That's what we've got to get rid of. How are we going to run it? We need to run this race with endurance, with perseverance, and to follow in the steps of Jesus is to tread the pathway that leads to Calvary. On the way there, there is hardship and suffering, hatred and hurtful words, isolation and rejection, and it requires endurance to get to the end of this Christian race. What's interesting to me when I sat with this in front of me all week was that the author tells us that we must run the race that is set out before us. In many cases, this is a reminder that not all of us in this room today are going to face the exact same trials and temptations. Not all of us are going to be able to share well what it is that we suffer with, because others are not going to understand, whereas others will more than understand what it is we're going through. Not all of us will suffer or rejoice in the same things. Many of us will have sorrows to share, and many will have joys to be rejoiced in together. The race that we run is different, really, for each and every one of us. And so the writer's telling you, mark out where you're running and watch where you're running and run the race that has been set before you. Don't run somebody else's race, because that is the temptation that I have found in my life more frequently than any other. The idea, I always love the story of Peter and John walking along the beach with Jesus. And after Jesus has restored Peter and said to him, do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, you know I love you. And then he says, okay, Peter, well, one day you're going to die. One day someone's going to take you and stretch your arms out and tells him he's going to be crucified and they're going to dress you and they're going to take you a place you don't want to go. And my reaction is Peter's reaction, where Peter looks over his shoulder and sees John and goes, yeah, but what about him? And Jesus says to him, don't you worry about what I'm going to do with him. What's that to you? You follow me. And so it's this idea again, not to be listening or distracted by the roar of the arena, but also not to be distracted by the runners beside you. Not to be looking at what God is doing with someone else and going, I wish he would do that for me. But to actually be listening to what God is already at work and doing in your life. But this idea of running the race before you is also a very painful reminder that not all of us get to run a marathon. Not all of us go to the grave and have it said of us, like Abraham, that we went to the grave full of years. There's many in this room who can testify that this race is a marathon, that you hang in there to the end and you have to persevere for each and every year that ticks past. But there are equally so many in this room who know that this is not a guarantee, that this is not promised. We do not all get the 26.2 miles. Some of us in life are going to run a 100-meter sprint. Some of us might get 400, and some might do the 10K. Not all of us are guaranteed to live a long and happy life, to enter retirement full of joy and have the grandchildren on our knees. Many of us might not see 30, 40, 50, 60. There is no guarantee about how long you're going to run. But what the writer tells us is it doesn't matter how long you run. What matters is how you run. Run the race with endurance. If your life is going to be a 100-meter sprint, run it like you're running the marathon. Charge down the hill. Finish it like you have so much more to give. Run hard and run to the end. If you have been blessed by God to be given the marathon race before you, don't walk it for the 0.2 miles at the end. Charge through the line. Run until the legs under you are about to give out and you can run no further. But run well. Run with endurance. There is no other way to run this race, because he has every single one of our days numbered. And whether we're running the sprint or the marathon, he knows. And so we run it with all the strength that he gives us. We run it. We endure this race by belonging to him, and we are guarded by God's power, but we are far from passive in our conduct of the Christian life. God commends the saints of old in their faith in that they were actively faithful. Just so God calls us to an active faith today. Raymond Brown, the commentator I mentioned earlier, says this. He says, running with perseverance is possibly only whilst they are looking not to the encouraging witnesses, the present contestants, the ultimate goal, or even the promised reward, but to Christ alone. Now, finally, we're going to talk about where it is that we have looked, and we've hinted that this is Jesus. Our eyes must be fixed on Jesus himself, always, never taking our eyes off him, not even for a moment, to look at the other runners, to look at the arena, to look at anything else. At Mount Stuart, around the 7th or 8th kilometer, as I was running, I could only think about keeping my eyes on the next goal. Richard, just make it to the trees. Richard, just get to the corner. Just get up the hill. Get up the hill. Get up the hill. Get up the hill. It was a really long hill. And in our Christian life, we only really have one goal. And that is to set our eyes on this. To run our race with endurance, looking to Jesus. And I love that the author calls him Jesus, because it comes crashing home again that this is God in flesh. This is man who lived and is compassionate towards us, one who knows our frame and our weaknesses, our trials and our sufferings, our temptations. Here's one who has triumphed, and we in his strength can triumph too. The one who ran the race of faith perfectly before us, the one who endured to the very end. And here in him is the source of our strength. The source of our strength to battle sin, to throw off all that is holding us back, and the source of our strength to endure to the very end. And our writer calls him the founder, and other translations call him an author or a pioneer, but Jesus is the one in whom our faith is founded. He is both the cornerstone and the capstone, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. He is the unshakable ground on which our hope and salvation rest, and without Jesus, our faith is useless. And we are above all else to be pitied in this world. If our faith is not founded in him, our faith is non-existent whatsoever. He's also the perfecter. Jesus is the one who completed our faith, the one who lived the perfect life when we could not, the one who on the cross cried out, "It is finished," the one whom the Father raised from the dead to vindicate him and to prove to a guilty world his perfections. Jesus' work then continues to be perfect in us today, in that by our imperfect faith, he makes us perfect, because the promise at the beginning of Hebrews was that he was bringing many sons to glory. And is this Jesus who endured the cross, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross and despised its shame? Well, what joy could this be? A few weeks ago, we talked about this in Hebrews 10, but the joy is this. Jesus' joy was rooted in knowing that he had accomplished the will of God the Father. To glorify God, the Father gave Jesus immense joy. But it was also the ingathering of the nations. The joy that was set before Jesus was this, that from every tribe and tongue and people and nation, a new humanity was being formed from all the generations that had ever lived, recreated from their fallen state and our blameless standing before the throne to cry out to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and might forever and ever. The joy that was set before Jesus on the day that he carried his cross was the praise of the nations to the glory of the Father, the praise of the people of earth gathered throughout time and space, standing before the throne and worshiping him as they were always supposed to do. The joy that was set before him was us gathered in Hamilton Road this morning to sing praises to the King on high. The joy is that just across the road in Hamilton Road Baptist Church, there are people of God singing praises. That over in Lisnabreen, there are people of God singing praises to the Lamb and unto God. That there are people in El Salvador and across the world, all over the place, singing praises to God on high. This is the joy that was set before him on that day as he carried the cross before him. The joy that lay behind the other side of the cross. Jesus despised the shame of the cross, for it was a shameful death. But he despised it for the glory and the joy that was standing on the other side. He endured the pain and the suffering because he knew the glory that awaited him on the other side. He endured to the end for the joy that was set before him. Now, the runner in the ancient world won a laurel crown, like a little wreath round his head. Not worth very much in and of itself, but it was a key that opened the door to become well known and to enter a new realm of being a champion. But Jesus, as he neared the end of his race, received a crown of thorns. He was crowned with the fall. After the games, the runner was granted the ability to sit with royalty. And now this day, Jesus sits at the right hand of the throne of God, receiving all the blessing and honor and glory from the 10,000 angels, from the saints who have gone before us and the saints that are gathered here on earth today. I'm moving to Board Mills in a couple of weeks. So let me try out a rural illustration for you. I'm practicing, so you have to let me try. Horses wear blinkers, yes? They're called blinkers, right? And the things that keep their eyes forward. This is how we run. Not distracted by all that is going on around us. Not distracted by the people who are running the race with us. Not distracted by all that has gone before us. Not distracted by anything else in this world. Not distracted by our money or the lack of. Not distracted by our health or the lack of. Not distracted by anything that we might have or want to have or don't have or can never have. But simply with our eyes fixed and focused upon Jesus, like horses wearing blinkers, we just run. So that we can say, I don't care what they say. Give me Jesus. I don't care what they do to my body. Give me Jesus. I don't care what's going on. And about all these things that are going to distract and pull me away, give me Jesus. Let me see him. Throughout Christian history, there's been this thing called the beatific vision. I've probably pronounced it wrong. But it's this idea of being able to see him at last. The promise that John gives in 1 John 3 is that when he appears, we shall see him face to face and we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. And that has to be our motivating factor every morning when we wake up, when the alarm goes and we think, I don't want to do this anymore. Just give me Jesus. Just let me see Jesus. Just let me run with whatever strength remains in my bones today that I might see Jesus. Let them do whatever. But I have got to see Jesus. Throughout this section that we've looked at this morning, the English language hides an awful lot of what's actually happening. For example, the great cloud of witnesses. Well, the word for witness in Greek is where we get our word martyr. So it's actually we're surrounded by a great cloud of martyrs. The word in Greek for race is the word that gives us our word agony. And so actually this is much more painful than our English polished versions like to let us believe. This is not easy to run the Christian life. It's simply not. But ask any athlete who reaches the finish line and they're asked, well, was all that training really worth it? And they'll all say, of course it was worth it. The sight of Jesus at the end of it all makes it worth it. Every excruciating millisecond on this earth, the face of Jesus makes it worth it. When I came to the end of the Mount Stuart 10K, even though I had very little left in the tank, I pushed with all my might. I did a sprint finish. Now, to those looking on, especially if Usain Bolt was there, he would say, that's a very gentle jog, maybe even a walk. But in my mind, it was an all-out sprint. Right through to the end of the race, where I went through the finish line and I got my well done, I got my pat on the back, and I got my medal. Yep,
And I just want to say mine is bigger than Amy's. We ought to feast after the race was over. And my feasting continued throughout the evening as I went home via Domino's. But I feasted with great joy that the race that I had set before me was done. And there was no greater joy. And when we finish our race, there will be no day after where your legs don't work. There will just simply be that everlasting feast of sheer delights and joy. To some of you, this is the last time I'll probably preach to you. Most assistants, I've noticed when they leave, they give both barrels at their last sermon, but I'm going to give one this morning and one at the other. Run this race to the end, to the bitter end, to the very end, till there is nothing left in the tank, till you can give no more sweat, nor blood, nor guts, till you've got nothing left to give, and then give more. This is the call of Christ in our lives, to run this race with endurance, for he is worth it. Now, you're about to enter a season of uncertainty and change that you've never encountered for a long time as a congregation. You are faithful people. Run this faithfully. Hold fast to Jesus. Hold tight to him. Let every sin that entangles and slows you down and keeps you down, rip it off your body with the hatred and the violence that it deserves, and fix your eyes on Jesus with the love and the hope that he deserves. Run it well. Run it to the end. Run it to its completion. Don't give up till it's over and the finish line is far behind you. The tape broken by your aching body and you simply fall into the arms of your Savior, who will hold you tight and say, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." And we will say with Paul, "I have fought the good fight. I have run the race. I have kept the faith. And henceforth there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness." Let's pray.